the Talking to Grandma podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. For today's episode, I thought I would share my own story of language loss and my journey to not only preserve my heritage language, but to also pass it on to the next generation. So this is a solo episode today. I wondered if I should read my bio like we do for our guest interviews, but I don't think that's necessary. You'll get to know me better in today's episode and understand why I do the work that I do and hopefully walk away with some inspiration and resources for raising and teaching bilingual children. This is our first solo episode and I am never at a loss for words. So if you enjoy this episode and would like more of these types of solo conversations, let us know. You can leave a review or slide into our DMs at Talking to Grandma on Instagram or email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co. So as I mentioned during the teaser episode, growing up in Texas, I didn't speak Spanish. And that was the first language of my parents and the only language that my grandmother spoke. Not only were my parents discouraged from speaking Spanish to the children by my teachers growing up, but I also rejected speaking Spanish when I had the chance to learn it in high school. I even remember saying to my friends at some point, I'm not Mexican American, I'm just American, period. Really, y'all, I said that. I can't believe it. So how did I go from zero Spanish and shame of my culture to una mamá criando niñas bilingües who are proud of their cultura? And what did I learn along the way? That's what I hope to talk about today. In our solo episode, you will learn more about me, my journey, and why I founded the Language Preservation Project and started the Talking to Grandma podcast. So, in the words of Esther Perel, where should we begin? Let's start with my grandmother, because after all, this podcast is called Talking to Grandma in her honor. It's not called Talking to Grandparents because I actually only knew my grandmother growing up. My paternal grandparents died before I was born, and my maternal grandfather was never in the picture. So it was just me and my grandma. She's from Guanajuato, Mexico, and came to the U.S. in her early 20s and settled in South Texas. Donna, Texas, to be exact. If y'all know where Donna, Texas is at, let us know. Get at us. You're probably my primo, prima, or prime, if you know where that's at. So this is where we spent most of our time with our grandma. And this is where my siblings and I would visit about 2 to 3 times a year. We didn't see our grandma that frequently, but we did see her for long stretches of time. And during these visits, she spoke only Spanish. She always said she had like some understanding of the English language, but really didn't engage in any English conversations. So that did create some necessity on our end to use some Spanish, but it was really just basic communication, like diciendo, yo quiero agua, o tengo hambre, or simple things like that. And I even remember, I know I didn't understand Spanish because I remember just like tuning out her conversations that she had with my mom when they were in Spanish. And one day, you know, when I was older and understood the language, it finally being like a light switch, like, you know, I could actually understand what they were saying. I really couldn't have any communication with her beyond basic commands. I actually saw her as like very unapproachable and quite mean, right? Because it was really just basic, like, don't do that, don't touch that. And that was, you know, our relationship growing up, the times that I could see her. And it wasn't until after college, when I moved to Mexico and learned the language, that I was able to really transform my relationship with my grandma. I was selected as a Fulbright scholar to go to Mexico as a teaching English assistant. And she was just so proud that I was going to go to Mexico, because she always talked about going back to Mexico, wanting to go back to Mexico, being really proud of her culture, even though that's not something that my parents really ever displayed. She did. And she was really happy that I was going back there and that I was learning Spanish. And then when I had children who could speak Spanish, she had a lot of joy in that as well, continues to have a lot of joy in that. And just being able to like connect with her in the Spanish language really expanded my knowledge of her life and perspectives, like really understanding the subtle feminism of her decision not to be relying on men, the impact of losing a child. Like, I had no idea that she had lost a child before I could communicate to her in Spanish, her perspectives on the right way to warm a tortilla. Like, you know, it just transformed. And so really understanding the transformative impact of my ability to communicate in my heritage language and to connect with my family and to connect with my culture really inspired me to ensure that my children had those same gifts. And also as an educator, that other children that come into the education system are able to cultivate and keep those gifts as well, knowing what a resource it is. So you can see that I'm all about, you know, heritage language preservation. But, you know, the question here is what kept me from developing that relationship with my grandma as a younger child? And what kept me from, you know, showing greater interest or developing the Spanish language as a younger child? Like, what took so long? And that also, you know, we also have to go back and look in time to understand that. So my parents grew up in South Texas, both of them in the Rio Grande Valley, at a time where they were actually punished for speaking Spanish, like physically punished, corporal punishment. It was their first language, their only and home language. And then when they got into school, it was an English only environment. And so there was that, you know, relationship in school settings of seeing Spanish as a negative thing, as something that's not valued, and as something that, like, you're physically going to get hurt from speaking. Interestingly, when they had Spanish as coursework in high school, then they were, you know, told that their Spanish wasn't good enough, getting like C's in the class, which, you know, maybe made sense because it had never been developed academically, but also didn't give them a sense of ownership and pride in the language that they did have. And at that time, and I think still in a lot of Spanish classes today, like, there's not any appreciation for the diversity of different types of Spanishes that are used. And oftentimes just, you know, it's what's in the textbook is right. So I think they kind of grew up with a complicated relationship to the Spanish language, and that definitely impacted them in their parenting journey. Like, when they had kids in Houston, we grew up in Houston, they were told not to speak Spanish to their children, like by educators and by pediatricians, because that would confuse us or cause delays or, you know, make us not as academically competitive. And, you know, while this was a really common, I think, misconception, there's been a lot of research since to debunk this myth. We still hear it today. Like, we have parents that are in our, you know, language preservation family collectives that hear this from their pediatricians around developmental delays. Like, I heard this from one of the teachers at my daughter's daycare, that her language could be delayed because she's in a house with three languages. Or some of the educators in our programs also said that, you know, their families say that they hear this from their pediatricians or other sources. So it's still things that are being said today that impact, you know, people's decision to raise their kids multilingually or not, because ultimately parents just want the best for their kids. And I think that's what our parents wanted for us when they decided just to speak English to us. You know, talking to my mom now, after, you know, so many years looking back, and now that I'm asking her to use, you know, exclusively Spanish with my kids, her grandchildren, she's also reflecting on some insecurities around Spanish and how that might have, you know, kept her from passing on the language to us, or seeing that, like, what she had was good enough. And so all of those things impacted their decision not to raise us in Spanish. I also think it's like the forces of assimilation as well, of wanting us to kind of do what was seen as like the right, good path to being successful in life. And I know that was definitely a struggle for our parents, and definitely like code switching that they had to manage in order to be successful as well. And I think that we absorbed those messages as kids as well. And I continued to absorb these messages until college. Really, college was like a major turning point for me. I think for many folks in general, in terms of like moving out of their community, going to a different place, if that's the case with their college experience, it was for me. I left Houston and I went to the University of Texas at Austin. And, you know, I was doing the freshman thing of just like really trying to survive, like really just trying to make it. Like the shift from high school to college was a total shock to me. I was like the top of my class in high school, really struggling in college. That first semester, really like working to catch up on a lot of what I wasn't introduced to in my schooling setting. But also like there was the academic sense, but there was also like the financial sense of it, of like, you know, college is a stretch for a lot of people. So for me, a large part of my, you know, college experience was looking for free food. And you could find free food almost anywhere in college. Like there's all these meetings that like have pizza or that have mostly pizza. I ate a lot of pizza and attended a lot of meetings, like signed my email on so many sign-in sheets in order to like get that free dinner or lunch. And one of these, you know, hunts for free food took me to the Mexican American Culture Committee. They were having a meeting that was, you know, catered. And while it was free food that got me in the door, they were also preparing for their celebration of Mexico's Independence Day. And they asked me to read a poem. And I love poetry. So poetry got me to stay. And they handed a poem to me that was written by Trinidad Sanchez. And I had never like read an author like this before. I'd never seen literature like this before. I'd never seen myself reflected on the cover of a book before like this. And it was incredibly transformative. I love this poem. I love saying the poem. I love hearing the words roll off my tongue. And I definitely carried that poem with me, you know, throughout that semester and even into my life today. I still remember the moment when I read that poem in front of a huge crowd on Mexico's Independence Day. I was out there on the quad looking out and said some of the lines, and I remember them to this day. I'll share them, some of my favorite ones with y'all. It goes like this. I am a Chicana. I am a brown feminist. Wild and free. I am a liberated Latina. Her jalapeno earrings were like a quotation mark on her smile. And the poem went on like that, with just such awesome lines and such self-empowering imagery. And when I finished the poem, the crowd embraced me with such a warm applause. And I ran into the audience, you know, to my boyfriend who was there, expecting the same type of embrace. But he didn't. He looked at me and said, "I didn't like you when you read that poem. You seemed different." And he was right. I was different. The girl that I was before I read that poem, before I came across the Mexican American Culture Committee meeting, was someone who was secretly grateful to be with someone with blonde hair and blue eyes, who was secretly ashamed, wish she had lighter skin, lighter eyes, lighter hair, someone who refused to learn her heritage language growing up, someone who didn't have a sense of identity and belonging and pride in where she came from. And the woman that I transformed into in that moment was someone who had an eagerness to learn about where she came from, who wanted to learn her heritage language, who wanted to be more connected to her family, her ancestors, who felt a sense of pride and belonging in where she came from, while also maintaining an interest in where other people came from. And this really was a transformative moment for me. Not only did I break up with that guy, and move on, but also like just change my trajectory. I enrolled in different types of ethnic studies classes to get a bigger, deeper perspective of the world and history. I started to read different types of books, started to learn the Spanish language, really just kind of falling more in love with myself in a way that I hadn't before, feeling more comfortable with my skin in a way that I hadn't before. And while this was so amazing and wonderful, I also had a sense of anger about it because I was like, what if I never went to college? Like, that was a real possibility for me, especially where I came from, where like very few people like had made it to graduation compared to, you know, what other graduation statistics were, and even fewer of them had made it to college. And then even making it to college, how many of them had been exposed to this type of literature, this type of curriculum in which they see themselves reflected. They see their own humanity reflected and the humanity of other folks who aren't generally reflected in our history books or in our literature or in our art. And so I felt like something had to be done. And that's why I became an educator. So I was like totally on the path of like pre-law prior to this, and then decided to become an educator. And my dad was like, what is happening? You're supposed to be a lawyer. I want you to like go down that path. And I was like, don't worry. I'm just going to teach for a little bit and then I'll go to law school. But really never went back to law school because education was where my passion and heart was. So I decided to become a teacher. I started in high school in New York City, then moved to Mexico City, couple of years there in middle and high school, and then also have worked in early childhood environments as well. And all of those settings, really working with incredibly diverse populations and creating culturally and linguistically learning environments where all children can see themselves reflected and their humanity reflected in the humanity and diversity of the world that surrounds them. And this was my work for a really long time, and I loved it. I was so passionate about it. I definitely wanted to continue this work. And I would say now, like 4.5 years ago, I got pregnant and went through the perspectives of like, what does it mean to raise a child, not as an educator and community member, but now as a parent, and felt like, I got this. I know how to do this. I'm going to, you know, raise my kid with exposure to like culturally and linguistically responsive environments. And like, it's going to be great. They're going to be connected to their culture and who they are. And then I had my firstborn son, and it was incredibly difficult because the job of raising a child is different than the job of teaching a child. While there's a lot of overlap, and my job as a teacher prepared me to do some stuff really well as a parent, it's completely different. And, you know, speaking to my child in Spanish 100% of the time brought up a lot of insecurities for me and made me feel like, you know, my language wasn't good enough. Maybe I was like effing up my kid, or like all of the doubts that I had really came into my mind. And I wanted support. Like, I wanted to know if what I was doing was the right thing in terms of like trying to pass on my heritage language to my kid, even though my heritage language wasn't perfect. And passing on, you know, my culture to my kid, even though I was in the process of reclaiming some aspects of that culture. And I remember feeling like this need just to ask for like permission all the time, or to get some validation, because I felt like what I was doing, like none of my peers or family members had done it. Like in our family, just knowledge of Spanish and culture progressively got less and less. And I remember just like looking for that validation and permission, like also asking other people, like, what do you think? Should I be doing this? And even getting the advice, like, no, you should actually not do this. And doubting myself along the way. And I stuck with it and really got through those like first 2.5 years, started to see the fruits of my labor, starting to see language develop and flourish in definitely 2 languages and then 3, and really felt like, you know, this was an incredibly rewarding possible journey, and feeling like it didn't need to be that lonely, wanting to really have a community around this topic of language preservation, reversing the trend of language loss in our communities and in our homes and in our families, and to also see more examples of other people doing that, like really wishing that I had more people to look to who had done that journey and to learn from their experiences. And so that's really why we wanted to start the Talking to Grandma podcast, because we know there are so many folks out there who are interested in doing this, who are doubting themselves, who aren't sure of themselves, who are looking for that community. And we're creating that here, we're creating that now, we're creating that for ourselves. We're so happy that you're on this journey with us. We're so happy that you are interested in preserving bilingualism and your heritage languages in your communities. And we're looking forward to many conversations together, because, you know, it's not, I have the information and that's it, but bilingual parenting, like any type of parenting journey, is an ongoing process. And we're here for you throughout that. Bilingual educating, like any type of education process, isn't just like, here's the one strategy and it's done, but it's an ongoing learning process that we're in together. So we're excited that you are with us on this journey. And we hope that you continue to listen to our amazing episodes to come. We have a great, great lineup of families, of educators, of researchers, of experts in the field of heritage language preservation and bilingualism. So thank you for joining us today. And we'll see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project and sponsored by Onward. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. We love hearing from you. Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co, slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma, and remember, please subscribe or follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening right now. Help us grow our community and reach more families and educators by sharing this podcast or leaving a review. See you next episode.